Opposed?
Maybe we can call the meeting to order here. And maybe I will just check and see. We've got Ryan on the phone, do we? Is that right?
Yes, it is, sir.
Sounds good. And Janine, do we have you on the phone with us, too?
Yes,
sir.
Okay.
Nice.
Pam?
Pam?
All right, very good. I hadn't recovered from the last shot from Janine, Pam. So.
I just had to make your day, Mike.
Yeah. Janine is respectful as always, so I... Eileen Roberts will not be here with us today. She had a conflict, and Terry Bulver also got a conflict here this morning and isn't going to be able to join us.
So do we have enough to... We'll have enough to vote, though.
Yes, we have a...
Yeah. Quorum.
We have a quorum. We have two members on the phone and three members here in the flesh. So we have five of our eight. Well, we have, what do we have? Eight members, seven voting. Am I right?
You just need, four. Just need four. You're good. Right?
Yeah,
four.
You're good.
We have to have four to have a quorum, if
yes.
I remember. So,
yeah.
Anyway, we're...
4.5.
we've got actually six of our eight members here. So, anyway, let's call the meeting to order then. Any others on the phone joining us, too? You're very welcome.
Lynette Shrope from McLeod.
Hi, Lynette.
Hi.
Anyone else? Okay, very good. Well, let's call the meeting to order here. The agenda, anybody have any additional items they'd like to add on the agenda? Hearing none. We have a motion to approve the agenda to move forward then?
I so move.
Okay, it's been moved by Bob. A second?
I'll second.
Second by Jeff to approve moving forward with the agenda. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none. Let's go ahead with the agenda. So let's take the minutes up next. If people get a chance to review the minutes, if they haven't done so yet from our February meeting. And I'll give you a minute to take a review of that. As you might recall, most of our meeting was spent with Dean Pass kind of reviewing the schema that he had put together in conjunction with Pam and any comments that we had gotten from some of the technical folks that had been engaged with that review at that point in time. And that was most of the content of that meeting last month.
Mike, by the way, while people are reviewing this, I sent out the email with the handouts for the people on the phone, too. So.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. That should make it easier for them to follow along. Okay.
Motion to approve the minutes is written.
Okay, motion to approve minutes by Jeff is made. Do I hear a second?
I second.
We have a second by Mr. Horton. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, the minutes are approved. Item number four on the agenda, terms of members. We talked last month that we would put this on the agenda. I know our crack staff has gone back and looked at the statutes again. I did as well. And I think we're going to just confer that we come up with that there are three of us on the commission whose term will expire here at the end of June. They are the three public sector members, Janine, myself, and Ryan. The other terms are not expiring as I read the statute,
right,
if that's
right.
what you guys do as well. And we need to make certain that notice would go out formally to the Minnesota Association, or MACO, the Minnesota Association of County Officers, which under the statute is the body that appoints the recorders and the auditor-treasurers to sit on the commission. There are a couple of factors involved there in terms of rural and urban and that sort of thing, but I think we need to just proceed to send notice out to Joel Beckman is the current president of the Minnesota Association of County Officers, and we can get you the address, but he's located in Dakota County. He is the auditor, treasurer, recorder, I don't know what his title is he goes by now, but I just call him Bottle Washer Joel. He just does everything, so
okay.
But he would be the party to whom the notice mm-hmm. should go.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions on the part of any of the members on that? Do we even need a motion to do that sort of thing? I don't think, no. But I thought just as an informational item, just to bring everybody up to speed on what the statute provides.
Mm-hmm.
There were three...
I have a question.
Yes, Janine.
And when is that... term up, June 1st, July 1st?
Well, my reading would be June 30th,
mm-hmm.
but I also read that people can continue serving until replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a provision in there as well. So the official term is up the end of June,
okay.
but people can continue serving until replaced if for some reason or another somebody didn't refill a position or something happens so that there's not a break in that continuity if that sort of thing has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That answer your question, Janine?
Yes, it did. Thank you.
But I think we'll be asking for
appointments before
that time
yes.
period. Yes.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Absolutely. As I was going to finish saying, the statute basically provides for staggered terms so that not all members of the commission would be leaving at the same time, potentially, so that there could be some type of continuity. So in another 2 years, those of you, Jeff, Terry, and Eileen Roberts' term would be up for consideration at that point
mm-hmm.
in time. And then, Bob, you're
a lifer.
No good time at all. And then Pam, she's kind of stuck too with us. We don't have to reconsider anything with Pam here, although future commissions might want to make sure they're smart enough not to bring that topic up. But anyway, that's the 8-member makeup and kind of the staggered term thing. So it's the public sector positions that are up now, and we'll get the notice out to MACO. Any other questions on the part of our commission members? Okay.
And can I also object then? So the chair at that time period would be, when the new appointments come in, be new elections at that time period.
We really haven't dealt with that, but I certainly think that's what ought to take place, is that the makeup of leadership on the commission should be reviewed at that time as well.
All officers at that time, or is it just anyone that's positioned that would be terminating at that time?
Well, I think it's the vice chair and the chair. I think
those are the only
two
positions.
Yeah, we only
so.
Have two.
It's in the act is in this report on page 21. That's first meeting by Emily thereafter. Commission select from its membership a chair and vice chair to serve 2-year terms.
Okay.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
okay. Perfect. Thank you for getting that file. I didn't go to that section.
Verifying how long I was serving.
Just like a successful marriage, right, Bob? Anyway. Well, why don't we go on to any committee reports. Under subcommittee reports, Jeff, anything on the trusted submitter side at this point?
No, just, I redid... some of the stuff that on the year-end report, but I think we'll get to that. And then we did not meet. I don't know if Janelle is helping me out, but Janelle is ill at this point, so we haven't had a meeting since for quite some time. And then just kind of one follow-up. We should be sending our first Dakota deed with the CRV, I would say within the next week, where we just put the number in and instead of, you know, so that should happen this next week. It should have happened earlier, but my miscommunication was my fault internally in our office to get some of that stuff out. But so it should happen this next week.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
The number that you're referring to is the receipt number from the CRV that you've already sent to the DOR?
Okay. They may want us to initially to have some backup or that type of thing, but at this point, I don't think we anticipate sending anything but the ECRV.
The number.
Number. Okay.
The number.
And not the receipt.
Okay.
As I remember, that's what our rules establish, is that you just have to put the number on the deed.
On the deed itself.
Yeah, and but in the manual world, they're kind of asking us to send that receipt along just as a backup, you know, just in case. So, but I don't think...
Full page receipt?
Yeah.
As a temporary backup?
Just as in case there's whatever. Initially, we've been doing it just because they've asked us to do that. So.
Who's asked?
Dakota.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And the manual receipt is what?
It's a one-page receipt off the ECRV system. At the end, you get a receipt. It gives you your number. It gives you actually the state deed tax. It gives you some base information about
PID number and stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty limited. Just a name and that type of thing. But that we've been sending that around.
With the deed in the package, or
just the deed? Yeah, with the deed. So, right.
And Jeff, are you obtaining that receipt and receipt number from the application on the DOR website?
Yes.
Is that where you go first and get that, and then
give
your package?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
We won't get that. I'm trying to think. We wouldn't get that number until we complete it.
Completed
the ECRV
form.
Right, form. Complete that, then we would get the number, then we'd place that on the deed.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Mm-hmm.
And from the discussions that we've had with Joel, he's reporting about 12% of all of his documents. The first couple of months this year were coming in electronically. So that's kind of exciting to hear.
Yeah.
At least that's what he's shared with me, and he's very anxious to get deeds because he thinks he can double it very quickly by being able to do the total package. Because what he's been doing, a lot of our mortgage refis and sats and releases. So. Mm-hmm.
And I understand, Mike, that Dakota County has announced that they're taking all of the document types now, but I don't know that they've actually implemented that. Is that correct? Does anyone else know?
I don't know the answer to that. Sorry.
I know we have sent a deed to them, but it wasn't. It was a quick claim deed, so it didn't.
Without a CRV.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I know we have sent a deed.
Okay.
And Pam, are you on? Can you hear?
Yes, here.
Can you hear the question about Dakota?
No, I didn't.
Pam, I was wondering whether or not I understand that there was an internal memo at Dakota County that announced that they were now officially going to accept all 11 document types. I don't know if that's a miscommunication to me or not, but I was wondering whether or not that is available to all submitters yet, or if there's a time frame on making that available to all submitters.
I think it's available to all submitters. I talked to Pat Pat Brown. I know, and she's got an email that she's either sent out or she's going to hit the button on the send pretty quick on that.
Okay.
But if you go to the Fiddler web service that they have to identify all the document types that, that Dakota County accepts, all the document types are out there. So they have updated that, and that implies that you can now submit those document types. So my assumption is that it's for all submitters. You just might want to call ahead and say, we're submitting this, are you ready for it? Because they may not have counted.
Or really kind of even watch to go through. That's what they wanted us to do with the ECRB. It's not...
But Pat Brown is the one I've been talking to.
Pat, yeah, and I believe I touched base with her too, Pam, a couple weeks ago, and I know that they were doing the internal structure of that. Just haven't seen the availability to the submitter side yet.
Yeah, and I think it was just yesterday I talked to her. Yesterday or 2 days ago I talked to her.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. There are some queries that I've gotten from some counties relative to the issue about deeds and the issue of what some might describe as workarounds concerning the CRB, and we have not formally adopted anything to that effect here at the commission. But I know there are some that have been submitted in other counties in the state, and they have been sent as part of the package to the Department of Revenue, the paper copy of an electronic submission of a paper CRV. And I've not heard anything about Revenue rejecting them at this point, but that's not something that this commission is, you know, involved in that sense, but that has happened, as I've been told, by a couple of my colleagues around the state, particularly in those counties that are border counties, which are competitive with neighboring counties that happen to be doing a lot of this sort of thing. And if they weren't doing that, they might find themselves at a distinct competitive disadvantage and perhaps even a more political distinct disadvantage in a year in which they're running for re-election. So I think that tells you all enough about what's going on. Any other questions then on the Trust and Submitter Committee? If not, why don't we go on to the County Recorder group. I'd like to probably first cover, because Chris Vasilisi is not able to be with us today. In your handouts there is a sheet that does have information about recording in the state of Minnesota for last year, and it basically was an outgrowth of our discussion last month.
It's also in the annual report.
It's in the annual report,
too. We ran out of handouts, so, or I have one, too.
No.
Oh, yeah, no, okay.
Got it.
No, we didn't run out of those.
Okay, I lied.
More over here, you go. Everybody got a copy?
Sorry.
It basically just reflects the amount of recording in every county that's abstract and torrens, and how much as a percentage was done electronically, either as a level 2 or a level 3 type of recording in last calendar year. I thought it was particularly meaningful in terms of getting a sense of, you know, what activity exists in torrens and abstract all over the state, which this, I think, even tells better than the absolute numbers, and also gives a rough idea of what percentage of the documents that are coming in to a given county in electronic form, and something to at least look at and measure going forward. So that was something that we'd asked that subcommittee to do, and Chris took it on to put that together for us. So I thought I'd bring that out, because it's something we wanted to include in the report as well. Then in terms of the other item for the County Recorder group, it's really the Model 2 attribute and schema discussion from the outgrowth of last month's meeting. And I have to apologize, we did not get that information out on our website as quickly as I thought we were going to. I think it's been out there for about a week.
About a week and a half now, yeah.
About 10 days or something like that.
Right. We have not had any comments yet.
No, we didn't really get much in the way of comments when we headed out to the techie group, and I've not gotten any feedback from anybody. As a matter of fact, anything that I have had has been of a positive nature, and that's very helpful for people that would want to take this on and doing a development locally. By having this made available, it would help them and assist them in that capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'd entertain, if those of you here would like to discuss it, if anybody would like to make a motion on it, if any of you here have got a question about it. So I open that up for discussion.
When we spoke last month, did we say we're going to have that that period of time, the 30 days or?
Well, we didn't say how long, but we said we were going to put it out there for publication or comment in advance.
Yeah, and
we'll try to consider it for approval at the March meeting is what we said.
And actually the website has a period of about 30 days, so sorry.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay, so we've got that out on the
yeah,
website.
Yeah, so it can't be finalized this meeting, so apologize on that.
That's fine.
Well, I'm just thinking, if we did finalize it and we could we make it subject to that, if there's no comments during the next X number of days, then, because really we had it out there for a comment period, mm-hmm. and then we updated this and made some changes. I'd personally rather get things moving on that and going. We've had the last time we put it out, Pam. The original standards when we put it out there for the comment period, did we have any comments at that time?
It was Dean.
One that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
And then this time we had
Jason Parker.
Jason Parker.
Uh huh.
So, are we bound to do it because of? Was mm-hmm. in the minutes. I don't even.
Matt Brown from Dakota County does have a comment. She just didn't know how to comment on it.
Okay.
But the document types. Some of them are plural. Some of them are singular. And she was wondering if it could just be consistent.
And Pam, I might add to that, the conversations that, this is Rob Wrights, the conversations that I had with Pat, I think there was still not a clear understanding of how to process those document types and how inclusive they were of other documents that would fall under those categories. And I'm wondering if there needs to be further discussion of that, or if that is going to be conveyed to each county as they come online, that these 11 document types are actually categories that include all these other documents. One of the issues that is not covered specifically as a document title under the document types is amendment to mortgage. There's an assignment and a modification for extension, but no specific amendment. So the question that I was exploring with Pat is, how would an amendment to mortgage be submitted? And is there a guideline that the counties are following for that? Does that have to be addressed in this scheme of discussion?
It was based off the uniform conveyancing
blank. There's no uniform
blank.
Conveyancing blank with that name, and that's why it's not in
okay.
there. If you take a look at the 11 categories, there's about 63, if I remember right, document types or document names. Am I right, Pam?
Actual document names. We've got 63.
60-something, as I remember. Those are the official names titled that came from the uniform conveyancing blanks. Now, that item that you mentioned, Rob, about amendments and modifications, there's not a lot of consistency in the community about how those are being handled, and I would say, from my observation, most of your colleagues, you couldn't distinguish one from the other. At least that's what I'm seeing in our office.
Right. Other than the language in each document itself.
Yeah. And that's one that, we could take up, but our initial thrust was to identify the ones that were the uniform conveyancing blanks. And those are the 60-some documents that at this point the commission took on to approve. Now, there are others in that uniform conveyancing blank family that we haven't dealt with yet, because there's about 100 and there's over 100 of them I know at this point that are out there and approved and we haven't gotten into. We try to deal with the big categories that would deal with things related to packages that we could get going.
Gotcha.
That's one that we might ask the group to consider, that what would be the difference. I don't think there's any difference other than the name and the title between an amendment and a modification.
I
would think everything else is identical for it, or we could just add a name, but we haven't gone that to the point of adding anything beyond what the UCBs have been at this point.
Okay. But I think your question was really, how do we know which documents fit into those 11 categories, right?
And if it is a modification, again, as you say, many times they do similar things. For indexing purposes and for a Model 2 schema for submitting electronically, a lot of the data would be entered similarly for those two. And I'm just wondering how much leeway each county, or is it going to be determined by each county, what leeway they want to allow their office to have in terms of accepting an amendment that is entitled an amendment to mortgage when it's entered in as a modification under the schema.
And I guess I'll say from my understanding of what we've done so far was to say if it's not in the 63, it's not within the standards.
Okay.
So if amendment isn't in there, we haven't really addressed it as a standard. Now, the reality is what is a county going to do? You know, that's probably open to some conjecture, but that's, I mean,
I would tell you, you'll find the counties will be as uniform as they always are, bro.
But I mean, from the point of this commission of building a standard, I think we've only addressed those 63.
Okay.
So then if there's questions as to whether something fits into one of those 11, I don't know, Pam, is there a separate document that says, say, uniform conveyancing blank, this goes here? Or we could create that as a helper document?
No, we just have the titles of the uniform conveyancing blank forms and the category they're under.
Yeah, okay, that's what I mean, yeah. So
that does help me. That gives me at least a...
Now, if you happen to include the category that it is a modification, but there also happened to be on the paper document the statement that it's an amendment, but it comes in as a modification, it probably will get processed.
And that's where I think maybe it would be important, if any submitter wants to submit a package that has such a document in it, to contact the county they're going to be submitting in first to see how they're going to handle it. And that's what I did with Pat Brown, and there was that very discussion about there's still a question of how much leeway each county is going to have for interpretation as that document comes in.
And which is really, I'll say, and Dallin can add to this as well. This truly is just a matter of course of business. Pam is contacting counties all the time saying, okay, this is the document I have. It doesn't neatly fit into this. What should I call it? And can you accept it? So, yeah, and that happens throughout the country, really.
And that is exactly what I'm running into as a commercial servicer rather than a residential servicer,
right,
at this point. Many commercial documents don't fit neatly into those very specific title categories.
Right.
So obviously with our type of operation, we would want to make sure that we're submitting correctly, so it's just good to know that that's what a submitter will need to do.
Yep.
And at this point,
Diane's kind of...
Mm-hmm. Oh, we've got on the screen here the document types and then the specific document title under each type. You might want to go down to mortgage.
Modification is the one that I was looking at.
modification.
So you have an extension of attorney lien and extension of mortgage, and that's our limitation at this point for modifications.
So I really kind of think that's kind of what we're, the life of this commission is probably going to be looking at, right? Okay, what's the next things we need to create standards around? And we took out of this high volume chunk, right? And then saying, okay, how really should that, we amend the standards to include amendments into the modification? That's, you know, I that's what I'd say we'd envision the remainder of the life of this commission is to do that very thing, right?
Kind to
of
keep expanding the... Right. The envelope as we...
Similar to a Uniform Conveyancing Blanks Commission.
Janine, you were going to start asking a question?
Yes. Well, I can't hear all of the conversation, but, you know, basically our goal was that by setting this up this way with the 11 document types, is that eventually everyone will file their documents under those 11 types? Wasn't that kind of what we were headed toward?
Well, I don't know if we necessarily said we're going to keep it at just 11, but, I mean, I think we would have to stay somewhat flexible on into the future because, say, a notice of mortgage foreclosure, would that really go in the notice area? Would we create a new category, sheriff's certificate, that type of thing? Need a whole category on it to itself. Amendment likely could fit into a current category that's there.
Right.
Right. That, I mean, that's basically what we did in our office. We took those categories, took the document types we usually handled, and decided which one they would fit under.
What every recorder, I think, is in the process of doing now around the state, depending on what they include in terms of name, document names in their system. And I just give you an example. In Hennepin, we had some 500 and some of which hadn't been used for probably 10 years. And we've consolidated the name into groups and then names of documents within groups. And we made a conscious decision as this was being evolved here at the commission level to take the document titles that we've identified here, and we have to match it up in our index, so to speak, with the document name that corresponds to that title. Now, we happen to have more titles than the 63 at the present time because we've got a lot of document types, tax liens, all the foreclosure documents. I mean, there's a whole lot of big things we haven't dealt with yet that we need to probably as we go down the road. But the thought, I think, was exactly what Janine talked about. We wanted to try and minimize the number of document types. And as we add more to try and fit them in there, if possible. But that doesn't mean we might not change some things as we go down the line, as we evolve with what we learn and find out with both submitters' experience and recorders' experience on that end. You know, we had, and I know we haven't gotten into that debate here, but, you know, a notice of foreclosure. Well, is that a separate document type of foreclosure? Or is that something you put under the mortgage? Because everything related to a mortgage and foreclosures, I mean, you can make arguments for all sorts of different connections on that sort of thing. And I don't know that it's... I guess people make livings doing that sort of thing and identifying, naming, and that type of thing. But every county is going to have to do that within their system. But we thought from a commission standpoint still it was best to stick with what we've got here that has become kind of a state standard already in the real estate community with the uniform conveyancing blanks. And to use that, at least from a commission standpoint, we know we're on safe ground in the real estate community. We know that it's something that people are familiar with, and they're not going to be surprised by seeing it. And if they want to, in their own back office systems, modify certain things to meet their needs, fine. But we've created something that we've come from in terms of that uniform approach. So that's what I think we were going to try and do as we go forward. but we'll probably end up with a lot more different names as we proceed here down the next few years. We get back to your comment, Jeff, the concept of pre-approval. Anticipatory pre-approval, is that what we were talking about?
Well, I mean, and really, we could approve, we could maybe hold out a caveat. I don't know if that would hold up anyone's work efforts at this time, but we could approve and then say if there's additional comments in the next 20 days, we could look at that again at the April meeting. But for all purposes, it's approved, and we would consider that an amendment. You know, because really we have kind of our first go on the, it would be the next version. But I just don't know that we're going to get, seeing how we've seen very little comments in the past. Jason gave some good feedback, and
I think the people that would give the comments have already had an opportunity to look at it. I mean, we made sure that, you know, Dallin, your folks, Dave had it. I know Bill Morey's had it with his folks. I know the Fiddler people have had it. The technical folks that have been most involved with us have all had it, and we've gotten back whatever comments from that group. It's not to say there won't be something coming from others, but
we could just say we'll address it at the next meeting then. If a comment comes in, and if it's valid, we'll address it at that time.
Jeff, maybe I might suggest we could indicate that based on what we know today, we can give a tentative approval subject to confirmation at next month's meeting. Because if we put something out there saying it's going to be there for 30 days, I feel a little uncomfortable saying it's the final, but it is final in essence. With tentative approval, I want to make sure people have got the blessing to move forward with what they've already started. And that doesn't mean we can't reconsider it then at next month's meeting based on anything that might come in between now and then.
Or approve it and say it's in the next
subject for final another review at next month's meeting. I mean, I
just so people know that if I guess the developers is where people put time and effort in, and then if we came back next month and said, oh, there's this one last change, but I think pretty much everyone's in the room here except for maybe Bill at this time, but I think everyone has a lot of awareness of what's happening. So.
And I had a chat with Bill here a couple of weeks ago when we were out at PREA, and when I chatted with him, he was fine with what where we were at that point. So I know that's where at least he was when I chatted with him. So, well, what's the pleasure? People want to go with Jeff's idea, give me a tentative approval or a preliminary, what do we want to call it? An approval?
An approval, and then I'd say let's leave it. But that we know, within the, we can note in our minutes or whatever, and that if something comes up this next month, we can...
We'll put it on for review one more time in April following the...
If it comes up, if nobody comments, there's nothing to do in April.
Yeah. I'd be comfortable with that. Anybody else with thoughts on that? Janine or Ryan?
That's fine with me.
I don't mean.
Okay. Well, with that, I'd be willing to entertain a motion. Jeff, you seem pretty anxious to do that, so I want to give you the pleasure of letting you be the author.
Okay. And I think at this point we're just approving the schema, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
As it's written, so I make a motion to approve the schema. Do we have a version?
Model 2.
Model 2. And is there like a version 1.0 or?
Oh, I don't know. Would you guys like to call it?
We probably haven't put a version number on it, but it probably is our first.
So let's call this schema version 1.0.
1.0, okay. But also, too, the Model 2 standards that were approved were updated with attributes.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
The Model 2 attributes and schema. And I assume that's part of that motion.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Should we call the schema then 1.0? And is the Model 2 attributes, the Model 2 standards is Model 2 standards, you know, updated with attributes, but that is the Model 2 standards, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Pam, was there was one change, right? The standards?
We moved a name or two around. Eileen wanted
renamed,
a couple of.
I thought we renamed something. On the spreadsheet.
Eileen wanted something in a different category. What was it?
Well, there was that release
of something that she wanted under releases rather than under
was
mechanics
it,
lien.
Was it this or? One that released the land from judgment lien? No.
Satisfaction
of attorney lien? Was it satisfaction or release of
That was the item that we changed, I know. Per Eileen's request.
Was it satisfaction and release of attorney lien? Does that sound familiar, Pam?
Well, I tell you what, at this point, though, we know we've made those. I do believe we made those adjustments that day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I thought there was one typo within the standards as well. We could take this document, mm-hmm. approve it as...
As it is.
As it is.
As it is. And if you want to identify it as is it 1.1 then?
I suppose 1.1.
Model standards.
And 1.1. Schema is
1.0. Okay, 1.1 on the model.
Is that what we're identifying?
Yes.
Is that the way you standard setting numbering folks would do, Pam?
Sorry, say that again.
If we took the attribute items that we've now got with some of the regrouping of a couple of the names and change that from 1.0 to 1.1. And if we said the schema becomes 1.1, is that a way that you would do for a naming of a various version?
Yeah, that works for me.
You would know the difference then if we had a historical reference to the 1.0 attributes that got amended with some of Eileen's suggestions, and now it's 1.1. And then the schema is 1.0, the one that we are considering approving again today for the first time.
I don't know if anything would have to change the schema based on what we're doing. I don't know if something was hard-coded in there that would have to change. But, we would just have a history log in the 1.1 version to say what got changed from the 1.0 version.
Yeah.
So if you're adding documents, you're adding it to your attribute and not to your schema.
We have to add that to the schema then, too. In the future, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'd need to...
Maybe going both ways.
Do it both ways, yeah. Yeah, I consider the attributes more kind of the business decision, and then the schema is the technical reflection of that. That's
right.
At least the way I try and understand it in my backward attorney way. That's why we've got Bob and Pam here, and Jeff and Dallin and all of these technical folks. So they're trying to make Kay and I into techies. Well, I've heard Jeff's motion. Do I hear a second?
I second.
It's been moved and seconded by Jeff Carlson, seconded by Bob Horton to approve the Model 2 version 1.1 attributes standard and the Schema 1.0 version standard that accompanies it. Is there any further any discussion on that topic? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It is carried. Thank you much. And we will put this topic on the agenda next month for an update in terms of any feedback that we get then, mm-hmm. Diane, from any of the parties out there. Pam and Dean and Larry DeLean and Chris Vasilisi, again, I think deserve a big, major, major thank you for the work that they have put in on this repeatedly over the last year, and I think it's done a really yeoman job and much appreciated. So I think we need to reflect something of that nature in the minutes to thank them for all the work that they've done on that for all of us here in the state of Minnesota. So thank you much. Anything else? That were the those were the topics that I had on the recording side. I could just tell you we in Hennepin have still been working with the State Department of Revenue about ECRVs, and we're pretty close to getting our act together and giving the Department of Revenue the deficiencies and the CRV in terms of it being able to be functional in our county. We have a few unique situations in Hennepin that most of the other counties don't have, in the sense that our county assessor has a few other peers in our county that have the same authority that he does, and revenue hasn't really built that type of workflow into their CRV process, and it won't work unless they incorporate that in as well. And some of us in Hennepin feel like with the money we've put into it that that's something that they should be doing, and we'll find out if our brothers and sisters at the Department of Revenue concur with that. But that's the issue affecting our assessor on this particular item. In terms of affecting us on the recording side, we're very fine with the product that we see out there in terms of being able to move forward on recording and being able to have kind of a dashboard that revenue is put out there for a recorder, for an auditor treasurer to go in and see the identification number for the property, be able to know the dollar amount paid on the property so you know quickly what the deed tax would be, and then the number for the CRV, which has been generated by the Department of Revenue, so that we can see that that's what's on the actual deed that comes in itself. So that seems to be in good shape from at least my operational standpoint in our auditor treasurer in Hennepin. So it's really kind of boiling down to the assessors, and of course this document is really one for them probably more than any of the rest of us so that they can make certain that we have a fair, just, and equitable assessment process on which we then can all depend on knowing that we're all going to pay our fair share. Anyway, that's part of what we're at in terms of an update on Hennepin on the CRB. Kay?
I just need to get this through my thick skull one more time. It obviously makes no difference whether you've given the Department of Revenue any money to be on their list to get to the ECRB process.
Makes no difference.
So why did my little dinky, poor, very poor county have to pay money for them, and we can't even be on the list to do something like this? I'm being a little facetious here, but I noticed in the report that
Martin County is on their list, I saw.
I haven't seen a list, so I don't know where we are, but I guess I'm looking at Outfield, Stearns, and these other counties.
Any county that put money in is on the list. And Martin County, I saw a list. I haven't, it's not in the report maybe, but there is a list that they have of those that that are on there. So yes, I can tell you that. They've been dealing with Sherburne County as well. That's kind of their next targeted county at this point. I was hoping that we could move a little faster in Hennepin, and unfortunately we haven't been able to yet. I'm prepared to take ECRVs today, even without electronic recording. And I don't need electronic recording to allow people to start using that from a customer base. And that would be no problem at all from our standpoint. But that's the internal flow, because Revenue at one time had told us that they would allow us to enter electronically the paper CRVs into their electronic system, so that we thought if we did that, we would then proxy in the ones that don't come in electronically, so that then our assessor could do all of their work in that electronic environment, and they wouldn't have to deal with their other workflow process. And now revenue has said, no, they won't let us do that. And so that would have been another alternative that would have been acceptable, so that we would have, rather than keying it into our current system, we put it into the revenue department system, and then that would take care of everything. We, our assessor, just doesn't want to have to key it into two systems, and that's what is creating an issue here. And that was what, there'll be some friendly discussions between our agencies, I'm sure, and you know how that works. It's just like a good marriage, you know, you argue and you debate and you negotiate, and then you agree to do exactly what your wife tells you. Well, that's generally what counties end up having to do with state agencies. Anyway, do we have anything else then for county recorders issues? If not, then why don't we go on to the year-end report discussions, number 6 on our agenda.
Can I back up?
Yes.
Is there going to be a report out to the at the recorders conference in June, 1st of June, from this commission?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. That's what we're going to talk about right now. The annual. Well, we're calling it an annual report for 09, okay, and the segments that are in it, and the pieces that are done, and pieces that are yet to be done. And I probably have to tell you right now that your chair hasn't done his piece yet. And that's my apology to you, but it will be done by the end of next week. I will assure you of that, so that we have it out yet during the first quarter of the year. Anyway, that if you want to kind of go through it, I don't know, Diane and or Sally, want to just kind of go through it?
Well, the bookmarks, I mean, I'm waiting until I get the final version to do the bookmarks, so don't worry about that. Type of thing. So let me see. We had some changes. Jeff sent some changes to the private sector.
Right. I can kind of, after taking some comments at the last meeting, essentially what I did was said to save paper as well, but I've taken this chart off of the.
Oh, I should not have put on the chart?
That should go.
Okay.
And.
Did I use the right update then?
I think that this is still the old one. That's
oh, okay.
In here.
I'm sorry.
Because I was thinking we weren't that far out. And we have a closer turnaround coming up too, so none of us should be too far out from that goal.
We had some interesting discussions last month's meeting.
Okay. All right.
That was calendar days and whatnot. So I could cut that up. I can kind of read you the paragraph that I've put together instead of the chart. And a couple of comments was really to use it by percentage level for turnaround time. And then also one of the comments was who did the study and what time period and what's the volume. So I stated here, in a study done by Indicom US Recordings Incorporated based in St. Paul, it was found that the median turn time for receiving a document back from a county recorder's office was 21 calendar days, because these are calendar days, not business days that were in the chart, when processed in the traditional means. In the 26 counties that Indicom US Recordings electronically submitted documents, 23 of the 26 processed and returned in 4 hours or less, the remaining processed in 24 hours or less. This is based on a six-month study with a volume of 25,628 documents submitted in all 87 counties in 2009.
And that's basically from the time you mail it out from your office and by the time you get it back to your office. So we're talking mail time in there, which definitely exaggerates.
Right. So what I did was take that number and I gave... because we two-day air everything out manually, so I said, or actually UPS, actually, anything in Minnesota gets it overnight. But I said 2 days there, and I allowed for 3 days on the back end, and it took all these numbers down by five, and then found a median after that. So the median comes in at 21, And so essentially what it's saying is today, the average turn time for our county is 21 calendar days. And this electronic recording brings it down to 24 hours or likely 4 hours or less.
Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. I was late.
I was in a hurry when I was putting it together.
No problem.
Beyond Jeff's, there was Jason sent the a little preemptive, well, a little entry paragraph to the ECRV as well. I'm kind of thinking what needs one sentence that really says what the ECRV is to a non sector reader.
What it is?
The company document.
It is the document where buyers and sellers disclose the amount paid.
Well, couldn't we say as basic as the ECRV, there's a certificate of value, the ECRV is the electronic equivalent
of the certificate.
Certificate of value. I think people are pretty, familiar enough
CRV,
with certificate of value. You know. So just that one sentence, do you think that would be appropriate then? Or do you think it doesn't need it?
Well, you tell me. Do people? You know, sometimes I know we use acronyms and we all know what they are because we're in the industry. But you know, do we need to say what it is and why it's there? We could certainly put something into that effect.
Spell it out after that first ECRV punch in parentheses, or spell it out and then put ECRV.
Yeah, that's easy. Yeah, sure. So I make things tough. What Sally's just saying is right here.
Put electronics or whatever.
Yeah.
The development activity is, you know, the Department of Revenue has established a development team to convert the paper certificate of value on real estate transaction sales in Minnesota to an electronic form called ECRV.
Yeah, I can put it, like, expand that sentence.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's all that really, you know, you could just put in there. And those who are in the business know that for whatever reasons, we all hate to admit how much we paid for anything. We don't want anybody to know, but Uncle Tim wants to collect those state deed taxes so that he can run state government, so he needs to know so he can apply his formula to the amount paid so that we can collect it. And of course we want to make sure that the county is the tax collector so that they get blamed and that nobody at the state would ever possibly be blamed for collecting that tax. There are no dummies over here. We understand that. So anyway.
And then the
you want my explanation?
I'll leave it at that one.
You're a big brother.
Yeah, and who's going to be reading it? So the only other thing that was new, Larry. No, I'm sorry. This is from Bill. Bill gave me a little bit more.
Bill gave you a little more.
Uh huh. Yep.
Yeah, I saw that. That was good.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I like about what Jeff has added here on the summary that he's got, the piece about the future and the benefits for electronic recording, his sentence there is really, it's it. That turnaround time of what, you know, you summarized in your summary is the real advantage for everyone in commercial and residential real estate in terms of the reduced turnaround time in getting documents recorded, reducing the potential for gaps and errors and people not having information and making judgments, and making that information then possible to be available more quickly for real estate commerce to flow more smoothly in our state. And that, I think, is a big plus to help avoid certain problems that have existed in the real estate world around fraud and deception and liability and all that sort of thing. So the faster and the better job we can do of that, I think the better off everybody is in Minnesota in terms of why people would want to
buy, sell, finance, and live and work in Minnesota. And I don't think that makes any difference whether you wear a red hat or a blue hat. We're all on the same board with that one.
And then the only other piece is just the appendix is just the survey with the percentages that Chris did.
Yeah, what Chris did. Uh-huh. Yeah, I think that's a great addition to how she's laid it out for us on that. Yep, thank you a lot. That was very nicely done. And yeah.
And then the other stuff is just the same appendix.
Yep.
You know, the numbers.
And she'll give us the version of the hidden cell that actually has the volumes in it.
The final.
The disappearing.
Yeah. We won't tell them.
So after you, Mike, give me your piece.
I will get you the history part on here, the introduction part here, and I'll make sure you have that next week.
Yeah, and when I then send it out, it's not a long piece, but send it out to the members to review.
Right.
Okay.
Right. To get it out for the members to review and comment. Mm-hmm. And I'm certainly fine with getting it out to those that have been routinely coming to our meetings for review, too, for that matter. We've kind of shared that with everybody, so I don't certainly have any problem with doing that with this as well. Okay. Any other comments about the report? And Kay, this is in response to your other question. This is what we're talking about having, and then this can be available for people at the summer conference as well, and whatever other things may take place between now and then, which hopefully will be a lot more good news on the recording front. We need more recordings, everybody, please. Things have gotten very slow.
Yes.
Things have just about died on the vine here this month. And we supposedly have a stimulus packet sitting out there. I'm wondering what's happening.
Now you're political.
I'm just asking questions, that's all. Nobody's using it at the moment that I can see. Anyway.
It was very scary. One month I had, or one day, of course, now this was a snowstorm, but I only had e-recordings. I did not have any paper. And, that's positive. At least I got something in that day. It has been very slow.
Anyway.
That's a BCP right there. Business continuity plan.
That's
an e-recording. Right?
Well, anything else then on the year-end report? We'll get that out here hopefully by maybe about the end of next week to people for your final review and comments so that we can hopefully get something out here yet. I'd really like to get it out before our next meeting, so it would be good if we can kind of try and get it out here by around the end of the month.
Yeah, so if members can do a quick turnaround time on the review first. Stakeholders, that would be appreciated.
Yep.
Yeah, we have a MLTA meeting, spring meeting is the name.
Sometime in April, there, I remember.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so
hopefully you have it. You should have it by then to share with members if you wanted to then, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've got to take some work product back.
You've got to show them what you've been doing. Your constituents want to know that you're actively doing what they bid you to do, right?
That's right. I'll cut my salary in half.
Well, I'm going to give you a 50% raise.
Okay.
Same thing, right?
Half of nothing is still nothing?
Yeah.
50% on top of nothing is still nothing. Okay. All right.
Feels good to get a raise, though.
Anyway. Any other business items? I do have one that I would like to address. And seeing as how we have an officer from the PREA board that is with us here today, I'm going to put her on the spot, even though I didn't ask her, to maybe give any little highlight update of the PREA conference that Kay was at. I was fortunate enough to go this time, too, and was there. as was Bill Morey, who couldn't be here with us today, but Bill was also there, along with Mark Bonicelli from Minnesota. So, Kay, any particular highlight items you'd like to just share with the commission from that experience we had?
We had a couple of really good sessions, and I think you'll agree, too. The Torrens session was good. That will be on the website also with an interview of Mark Monticelli, because he wasn't picked up in the PowerPoint, so there'll be an interview on the side of what he was. There was quite a few comments from the other counties, and you, Mike, you too were involved in that discussion about Torrens, and I was quite surprised about the volumes of Torrens in some of the other states like Ohio and North Carolina. It surprised me. The other session that we had I thought was really interesting was the RESPA, and the HUD people were there. That was an excellent panel. They were kind of put on the spot for some of the things that were happening, and that became a good discussion. And the final panel was, the large panel that we had was on, refresh me,
bulk sales.
And that could have gone on for another hour or so after that. Really good representation there, too, and a pretty good discussion where bulk sales is all over the place, you know, to some degree. So those are some good issues.
Bulk sales in which way? In regards to assignments, are you talking about?
No, it's...
Bulk sales of data from counties.
I see.
It's what I would describe as you've got two tiers of people that are interested in the information of our offices. They're the ones that want it because they need it to use in their jobs. And then you've got what I kind of call the consolidators that want the information to consolidate it, to package it for something else that they then market or sell to others to enhance their business decision-making. So you had, matter of fact, from Minnesota, we had Mosby from the MLS was there as one of the speakers talking about where and how, and he gets that and how it's used and why it's valuable and so forth. There was the North Track. Who was the... the foreclosure guys.
I can see their faces.
Anyway, he caused quite a stir in my county, and I kind of got on him a little bit about the data that came out about how many foreclosures are going on in Minnesota are going up, and the information that he's got is different than what's going on in our county or in the metro area. The foreclosures went down last year, not up. And, you know, in talking to him, I just said, you know, share with me what type of data do you collect? Well, you know, the figures don't lie, but, you know, for example, he collects all of the notices of intent to foreclose. Well, sometimes attorneys have to file a second and a third notice of intent to foreclose. They maybe screwed the first one up. They don't want to talk about that, but that does happen from time to time. Or somebody in the company says, no, hold off on that. Well, then the timeline passes and they've got to file another notice. So they file and initiate it again, but it's not necessarily a new foreclosure. Or there's a foreclosure and then somebody files a notice asking the foreclosure to be postponed under Minnesota law. So it drags it out. And his numbers made it look like our foreclosure rate was going up and our foreclosure rate is going down. So I had an interesting chat with him after the panel discussion about that sort of thing. And he told me he was going to send out information to any recorder that wanted it. And I still haven't seen anything from him, but he said he was going to send it out. But it was an interesting discussion about how, who uses it, why it's used. The president of, the chief legal counsel from Old Republic was there. And he spoke very eloquently about, you know, the need and the importance in the business and to have it. And also made comments that I thought were very positive in the sense that, you know, if industry does need to support those in government to get the data and to have it done and have it done accurately, it is important. And we're willing to partner with you to do that sort of thing. And those of us from Minnesota said he means what he says. They did do that in Minnesota. They did step up to make some of that happen, as well as others in that group. Yeah.
It was a good panel. Bulk access is always a good discussion at PREA. I think, you know, the technical side is not probably as exposed because that's more concentrated on the people who are more technical. and they have their work sessions there. Bill is working on another document for the they finished the trusted submitter side, and now they're looking at another piece. So all in all, that was the kind of the technical side of CREA was, you know, off kind of on their own working. We're working on some international pieces. We're having a group from China come over. We're going to be in Chicago at the end of July, and this group, I think there's between 5 and 10, will be coming over from China, and they are looking at putting their land records into a system. It would be it's kind of their farm or their rural property that abuts and some of their city growth property, because they don't want to they have to get it categorized now because they don't want the cities to keep going out into the country, because they need that the produce from the countryside. So that group is coming over, and we're working pretty intensely on how do we communicate, for one thing, and what do they want to know from us and see from us. And so that ought to be a really interesting group. I don't know, you know, really even what kind of records they still even have. I'm sure they're pretty basic. They do have a system, I'm sure, but it's, you know, now they're going to get it more into kind of our types of systems. The only difference is that when we start down here with our systems and have been working our way up, they're going to be lucky enough to start right here. And e-records, you know, could be right up on top. I mean, they're going to be able to skip a lot of the levels and a lot of the steps that we had to go through. So it'll be an interesting conversation we have. So that was, I think, the highlight. The main highlights were those presentations, I think, particularly the bulk access one.
I did spend one afternoon with the committee that's working on the electronic reporting 3.0 standard for from MISMO and CREA. Yep. And I, you know, I was there and I listened to the discussion. I must tell you, I track it to a point. People were very pleased with what they were seeing in some of that activity, and excited about there's progress really being made, and they liked what they saw, and there was really very good positive feedback coming from the techies that were there going through much of that. So that was really kind of interesting for me to sit in on, and that's really what I wanted to see, because that kind of takes us to our 2.4 that we've matched up with here, to hear what they're talking about now with going up to the model 3.0. So
it's going to be a big step for a lot of people to go into that, but
yeah.
It's definitely past due.
Yeah.
And when were they looking? Did they think a projected timeline or anything?
Well, no. They want it real soon. I mean, Kay,
yeah.
you had the meetings after the.
I would assume.
So.
Well, it
it's not quite ready yet.
It's not quite ready, but it's always on the edge. So
yeah.
We each keep saying, so, like, you know, keep our fingers crossed. Is June a possibility? That would be the golden
that's,
egg right there. You know.
Okay. In the working session, that's what I got. Is that, you know, we're real close. Mm-hmm. We got a little more tweaking to do. We're not quite ready yet. So
yeah.
That was what I heard. But
yep. So we'll keep our fingers crossed for June to see if that's a possibility. But there's always DC 2011. Or, you know, we don't have to, you know, it wouldn't have to probably be voted on by the group, too. So unless it's just voted on, approval by the group. It was a good conference. Good attendance, by the way, too. 150 people showed up for that. So it was very good attendance. We also did a tour of the Capitol, too, which was put on by CREA, which does kind of surprise me a little bit that they would sponsor that. But it was very well attended and a very beneficial thing to be able to go to the Capitol and talk about CREA and pushing e-recording. So we did get to talk to our legislators, their aides, and we had a formatted piece that we could talk about CREA and what they did, so that was a good plus for us. So at least to say that if you want to have a connect, here's a standard-setting body of business and government people that you can come to and get some answers, or we'll help you out with stuff. So that was a good piece
the,
for us.
The thing that I found is true in D.C. as much as it is here in Minnesota is the shock and the surprise on the part of legislators to see business and government collaborating together and working together to make things work positively, rather than to be chipping away at each other.
Mm-hmm.
in sessions where they're lobbying and activity. That comes as a huge surprise to the D.C. legislature, I mean, our Congress people. And in, you know, kind of the polarized environment of D.C. here, where things are at, that was kind of clearly what came out of all those visits was the most interesting phenomenon was, my gosh, you're an industry and government group working together to discuss your common issues and try and find resolution to your problems together. They don't find that out there. And it's the same thing you find here, you know, whether you go to, you know, Department of Revenue or Secretary of State's office or Commerce. There's more of that that's going on now here with the sort of things that maybe we've gotten smart to that you get more with honey than you do.
That's a very valid
right.
point, though. That's
but I think that was the
point with us even working with state agencies, for particularly working with the Department of Revenue. I mean, this has been a very slow process to get to the ECRV, but at least we're getting there, got there, at least with Dakota and with Hennepin now. And that opens the door for the future that these relationships can kind of continue to go on. That's good sessions.
Well, thank you, Kay.
I have one other question. You know, when you guys were talking about this, actually an employee asked me last week, and I had no answer for him. Has there ever been an effort to actually assign numbers to the jurisdictional recording offices? I was thinking, after you mentioned that, I thought, you know, actually it probably flow well with e-recording, you know, and trying to actually differentiate, you know, here it's just counties, but it gets extremely complicated in various other places where you may file with a city within a county. You know, we have a northern part of a city, southern part, so there's these jurisdictional areas. It would be interesting if there was some kind of national effort to number, or I don't know if that's even has ever been an effort.
They talked about the PID number, of course, and that's been a discussion. It's an old discussion with PREA. They've got a paper that's kind of, you know, there on that. And it's interesting you bring that up because somebody else just contacted me about that same piece about this numbering system. But that actually is kind of an interesting point, something we could bring up as just a topic of discussion.
I think in some ways, if you had a national database of all, because so here it would be 87 counties, and we would say do whatever, you know, alphabetical, and then that, you know, if there is for some reason a county splits, there's an 88. You have
a county code already in Minnesota. Did you know that? And it is alphabetical. You start with A and you go through and.
But
Kay probably
thinking,
knows her county number. I know I'm in the late 20s, but
I can look at Pittsburgh's federal information.
Yeah, but see, that doesn't quite match up with recording jurisdictions.
But I mean, if they're all localities, I mean, if the county. Anyway.
Yeah. So I mean, it would have to be something separate because there isn't, because you know, there's no zip codes or there's no FIPS, there's no nothing that purely delineates. This is a recording jurisdiction, and say we had that code, we could, I don't know, what number of state we would be in the alphabet order. Let's say we're 30 for a number, so maybe we'd be 30-01-02-03, you know, so we'd have this kind of true database of all recording jurisdictions, because it doesn't necessarily have, I'm not saying it should be a county, because there's counties, there's boroughs, there's cities,
yep.
It's truly recording jurisdictions. And I don't know if that's something we'd want to take on as to start with that, but I think it's a great idea.
I'll bring that up.
Clearly, from a submitter standpoint, that would be
a because I would think it would be beneficial for a submitter to do that. It would definitely clarify, particularly if you have a city, you know, where you're recording other counties, particularly out east, I think, too. There are a lot more cities that don't have.
A lot more city recording jurisdiction. And I don't know that in the past there's ever been really a PREA type organization that looks at all the recording jurisdictions together, regardless of whatever you are, a borough, county, city, or whatever, and looks at it on a national basis.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'll bring that up as a discussion piece. I'll say, Jeff said that. There's a business sector, see?
Yeah.
One more item that I'd share with you that came up that there'll probably be more discussion nationally on that front, but I know, Rob, you and I had a discussion here. There was a professor from the University of Utah. You may want to look him up out there, Alan, when you're back home. But his name is Chris Peterson. He's in the law school there at Utah, and he has written a paper about kind of the history of MERS, the Mortgage Electronic Recording Service. And he kind of gets into the origin of it and trying to save money and recording fees and not having to deal with assignments and so forth. And he kind of gets into the genesis of how it then got to be used as part of the securitization problem that has been created and what Wall Street took and used and how it came about. And his basic thrust is that if you analyze it from a commercial law standpoint with commercial paper and promissory notes, that you find that the lack of transparency about the disclosure of assignments and knowing who owns the mortgage is part of what's at the heart and soul of now the inability to extricate ourselves from the mess that we've gotten ourselves into, when there's been no legal precedent ever, either by statute or by court decision surrounding it. Now, that's his argument and his premise. And he's rolling out saying that if you take a look at what's going on in the bankruptcy courts now, as MERS comes in, as the nominee sort of represent the parties who own the mortgage, but they can't produce the note, bankruptcy judges are dismissing them from the bankruptcy proceeding, and their mortgage note is kind of going SOL. And it's becoming a major issue in the bankruptcy courts, and MERS has tended to win most of the decisions in the district courts where this has become an issue. But there's getting to be more and more frustration about who is MERS. They don't get the income stream in terms of the payment on the mortgage. They're not entitled to the principal. They're like this independent third-party agent who's anonymous and doesn't have to be responsible for anything, and we're not going to give you jurisdiction to be involved in the proceedings unless you can produce the note showing it. And apparently, somehow or another, MERS has been having some difficulty producing notes in bankruptcy proceedings, and now every foreclosure or every bankruptcy attorney demands that MERS produce the note because the word is out. And that's the genesis of what's beginning to evolve and emerge here on the horizon, which is kind of a fascinating dilemma in this particular marketplace with what's going on. And as he made the comment to all of us, if I'm right, I almost hate to think what the consequences are legally with the whole securitization problem and the mortgage meltdown that's gone on.
But MERS wouldn't necessarily hold the note, right?
I mean, very seldom, if ever, holds a note.
Yeah.
The note is passed on from assignee to assignee without record of that assignment. It's simply MERS holding title of record, if
right.
you will, to the mortgage.
But MERS goes back and tries to find the note, and they can't get the note. Now, who's got the note? Where's the note?
Right.
You know? And that's what the problem is that's being created. And so then the issue has come up, well, is this any better off than the lag in time that existed in recording offices on the public record? Because MERS is no better than recorders were.
Or missing assignments. Or
and they're missing these things just like the public record did. And what are we talking about here? I thought this was better, and it's not. And that's what some of the bankruptcy courts are raising in terms of, and this is all a private thing, and it's not publicly disclosed, and this is not good for a free enterprise economy, and how do people know? And that whole issue of transparency is becoming more of an issue, and I had no idea this was even going on. This was...
They're taking public record away from public record, and they want to even expand upon some of that too. So I think that was kind of a concern too. And they haven't really figured, if you would, you could figure out how many times one of these mortgages normally would have been assigned, and where is the money that would have been to the recording or the process or the public record is now not there. It's all is all pretty well lost. So that was a concern too. He will be coming to Minnesota June 10th. He's going to be at the Recorders Conference. I just talked to him last night. So we lined him up. He was pretty excited about coming, and we'll have to get him up to Two Harbors. But he's just a fascinating guy, a really good speaker, and really gets you in. And I think he's good because we don't know what MERS does. Because when MERS started out, you know, we were all kind of like, oh, I don't know, we don't want to go down this road. But we didn't have a lot of choice because it's Fannie Mae and it's Freddie Mac. There's some really big investors in MERS. And, you know, we're the county recorder, you know. So where do you go there? So that part, he gets you really involved in that. And we forgot about MERS. You see it on the document as a document, and it says the bank of the lender is, you know, what, Prairie One, and then it's all going to MERS. Well, that's really not an assignment. That's just the mentioning them on the mortgage, and there's no really record of that mortgagee or nominee or what really is that involved. So,
well,
you need to know
he has collaborated with, why did I bring it up? Professor up at the University Law School. He's done a lot of work in the foreclosure area here. Prentice Cox. And he's even told me when I was out with him, I talked to this Peterson, that he and Prentice are talking about collaborating on a book, kind of explaining this whole meltdown and the whole background and stuff that's gone into it and what have you. So, anyway,
it's not going the other way. Two of the five largest lenders are requiring it for all their correspondent lenders, and as of, so I mean, it's getting larger and not smaller.
Which, the MERS?
MERS, yeah, they're requiring MERS.
MERS Corp is is a manager of NISMO right now. Because the Mortgage Bankers Association couldn't afford it anymore, and so they still are MERS or MISMO, but the manager is MERS Corp.
What is going to happen, I would predict here, as public policymakers become more aware of this discussion and debate, the frustration that exists right now that public policymakers, be they legislators, council, city council, county commissioners, encounter is when homeowners can't get to a party that owns the mortgage. They don't have anybody to deal with. And if the mortgage has been securitized, more often than not, there isn't anybody that you can deal with. And that is the heart of what many are growing to say, this is a sham. There is no transparency. How do I get to who's accountable for all of this? And there isn't anybody there. And MERS is going to get to be the focal point of what have we set up? And there will be, I guarantee it, there will be in the next couple of years discussions from a policy standpoint of do you undo some of those things that MERS has put in place? Or if it's going to be a private system, it has to be publicly disclosed who owns the mortgage. And if it's not, there's going to be some other issues that you won't be able to foreclose by advertisement or, you know.
I think it is public, though. I don't think you don't have to be a MERS member to look.
All you get is who has the income stream. You don't get the ownership of the mortgage, and that's the problem that we're all having with this whole securitization.
Yeah. I think that was kind of one of the key points or one of the internal parts of the missing. Who really has that note? I think that was kind of one of his.
Oh, who has the note?
Who
actually holds
the note?
Her.
And that's
his possession, which is could likely be a custodian or say because what he's
that's where the flow of the money is
right.
For.
I'm just saying
note,
that
it's not with the other pieces.
And
when he says he can't come up with a note, I don't think it would be any different. We could get a long discussion. I don't think it'd be any different than going to a mortgage company and they can't find a note.
Right. Well, I was just going to say maybe because we have that one on.
Yeah.
But he's a commercial paper guy, so that's why he gets into that. He's looking at it, promissory notes all the time in commercial paper, and he's viewing the law, and that is pretty well established, and this doesn't follow that, and he's having trouble tracking. So he's trying to dig into the real estate law.
I'm all for more assignments.
I am too, because it costs really little right now.
Anyway, I think we beat that enough to death. Anything else anybody have? If not, thank you all very much, and we are willing to entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
It's been moved.
Second.
Seconded. Not debatable. All those in favor signify say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Thank you all on the phone very much. Appreciate your contribution and participation.
Have a great day. Thank you.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye now.
Go enjoy the day.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you all very much. That's
fine. Robert Drew has got a whole series of things going on now, too.
Just go back to the office.
Yeah,
just go
home.
You see it in the newspaper all the time.
You can just let me off.
It's being constantly
breaking the white.
He would die if he were wiser. I feel it about go hit Dania.
Like you say,
the really Macy's.
My girlfriend got really good
stuff. All I remember is
now it's off.
The guy was R.K. Arnold, right? And I remember with the or PK R.K. Arnold, those original guys that came out. And remember when the MERS was first starting, and he came and talked to all the county recorders and said, "Don't worry, it's not going to be less; it's going to be more to you." I don't know if you guys remember this conversation, because that was the issue.
We're still recording.
And they said.